The Guardian.
Hello, I'm Michael White, and this is Conference Daily from Birmingham's big conference centre, the ICC. It's been 14 years since the Conservatives have met for their annual shindig as a party of power, back in government after the Labour hegemony. And today, Chancellor George Osborne set the tone by pledging to shape up the welfare state and the economy, at the same time launching what amounted to a smash and grab on the better-off section of middle-class mums and dads.
We still pay over £1 billion a year in child benefit to higher-rate taxpayers. Now, believe me, I understand the most higher-rate taxpayers are not the super-rich. But a system that taxes working people at high rates only to give it back in child benefit is very difficult to justify at a time like this. And it's very difficult to justify taxing people on low incomes to pay for the child benefit of those earning so much more than them. These days, we've really got to focus the resources on where they are most needed. We've got to be tough, but fair. And that's why we will withdraw child benefit from households with a higher rate taxpayer. When the debts left by Labour threaten our economy, when our welfare costs are out of control, this measure makes sense.
So, from 2013, if you or your partner or spouse pay the top rate of tax, you'll lose all your child benefit. That's above salary of about £44,000. But Chancellor Osborne also set his sights on a more populist target among Conservative delegates, those people who claim out-of-work benefits, over what the Chancellor chose to call, again, a lifestyle choice.
So I can announce today that for the first time, we will introduce a limit on the total amount of benefits any one family can receive. And the limit will be set according to this very simple principle. Unless they have disabilities to cope with, no family should get more from living on benefits than the average family gets from going out to work.
Lifestyle choice there, it's a phrase which niggles with many people, but it means that welfare payments are going to be capped at around £500 a week per family, the average family income. To get a sense of how this speech went down here in Birmingham, I asked delegates how they poured out of the hall. Here's a sample. I must say, they weren't as alarmed or cross with the Chancellor as I might have expected.
I think the balance of fairness and strength in the cuts that needs to be made.
Yes. You got kids?
About three, yeah.
Well, it's got to be a bit expensive potentially then. Family income goes above a certain figure. Or is that a worry for you? It may not be a worry for you directly, but a lot of people in this hall, they didn't seem to be too keen on that.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's a concern, but you have to look at the future, and that's what I'm thinking. Can't carry on spending money we haven't got, and I certainly wouldn't advise the same of my children, so I think it's fair. It's going to be hard and tough, but I think you sent out the right messages.
Yeah, it's absolutely brilliant, really inspirational.
What do you like about it?
Oh, he's just come to his fore being Chancellor, and all about fairness and getting the country back on its feet.
Will those changes on child benefit affect you?
No, because I don't have children myself.
Okay.
For some length of time, I think we felt that people with a high earning should not have benefits for their children. Okay, I can understand there are sort of conflicting points, but I do think that that's the right way to go, and I do think it's putting benefit where it needs to go. The whole benefit system does need a complete shake-up.
And while we were canvassing opinions, up popped the irrepressible Brummy, Lord Digby Jones, briefly a minister in Gordon Brown's government. Do you remember the goat, government of all the talents phase? Like most of the goats, he bit through his tether and disappeared within a year or so. Anyway, here's Digby Jones.
I thought he got the right note. I think he absolutely got the right note. It is actually refreshing to see a Chancellor that's giving credit to others like Nick Clegg and Danny Alexander and even the Prime Minister. And I have to say, I thought the way he set out why what's got to happen is going to happen, I thought was very rational and very good indeed and not ideological.
You're talking about reducing the deficit now rather than other aspects of the welfare.
Well, I thought two things. One is reducing the deficit now as opposed to waiting. I've always thought waiting, the one problem is in a democracy, the nearer you get to another election, the less you want to do, whoever you are, whatever party.
On the other hand, you've got to keep demand up in the economy, and if the private sector's saving its debt down, then the public sector's got to take the strain.
Or you hope the private sector starts to employing more because it's incentivised to do so. I accept that. I accept it's a judgment call. I think the other point that is I like to see today was this concept, and I get this around the country a lot, my friend. I mean, I go around a lot, is that it's got to be worth going to work. You've got to have a gap between the highest of the benefit receivers and the lowest of the not, or at least the average. And I applaud, for instance, the Liberals saying £10,000 first, £10,000 tax-free. I wouldn't do it for everybody. I'd do it on if you're on the minimum wage, you don't pay tax. But at least it's going in the right direction.
Next to wander into my spider's web was TUC Chief Brendan Barber. Different take from him.
Well, I thought it was a kind of confident performance, but there wasn't too much kind of very solid or clear in it. And I'm not surprised because, you know, we're 2 weeks away from the big decisions, which are about, £80 billion worth of expenditure cuts.
What made you particularly nervous in there today?
Well, I didn't like the language that he used again today about people on benefits having made a lifestyle choice.
There are such people, though, aren't there? There may not be the majority, there may be a small minority, but the tabloids find them all the time.
There may be a very, very small minority, but it seems to me that it's language deliberately designed to pander to a pretty nasty sentiment that's alive and well in the Conservative Party, and I don't think it reflects the reality. People on benefits, job seekers allowance, £63 a week, you're not living high on the hog on that.
Last point, if you're worried about fairness and you're worried about people on the low end of the income scale, is it okay for him to say we're all in this together, people on high rates of tax should lose their child benefit?
No, I don't think so. I mean, the budget he already announced a little while ago, the IFS said was regressive. The analysis of spending cuts coming down the track are that they will inevitably be regressive and hit the weakest hardest. And this kind of populist, reasonable-sounding idea of stopping child benefit for people on higher rate tax breaches a very important principle of universal benefits.
You mean that once we don't all get it, then it'll become politically easier to chip it away from it as something just for the poor? Is that what you're saying?
Well, it'll become easier to chip away at it. That's certainly a real fear. You'll introduce very odd anomalies whereby you've got two earners in a household, both just under the higher rate tax threshold, who'll retain the benefit. Whereas in another household with one just above the threshold and another maybe way, way, way below, we'll lose the benefit. So you'll get all these anomalies that seem to me to be a real problem.
Richard Lambert of the CBI, cited by George Osborne there as being on his side against pretty well everyone except Ed Miliband and... who was it? The TUC, of course, who just spoke to Brendan. Yeah. Well, what do you think about that?
It was a different sort of speech from last year. Last year he was telling us how painful things were going to be. It was a very austere and grim one. This one he was telling us why the cuts were necessary, in his view, broadly how they were going to go about it. And he was telling us that this was a means to an end, and the end was, in 4 or 5 years' time, a more prosperous, better balanced economy and a more healthy society. That was his story.
That's a gamble, of course, because we've seen in other economies the danger of a double dip, the Irish economy.
There are no comparisons between the UK and
Ireland. But he makes them. He makes them, and he makes them with Greece and Spain.
There are no comparisons.
I'm glad to hear you say that, because we think that too.
We're not members of the euro. Our banks, though crocked, are not smashed in the way the Irish banks are. We're a bigger, broader, more open, more diverse economy. And our public finances are in a lot better shape.
You make the interesting point about last year's speech where they were in austerity Britain mode and the opinion polls reflected people didn't like to hear that and they backed off it in their campaign rhetoric. And yet, of course, previous year they'd been supporting the Labour government with what now turn out to be extravagant and unsustainable spending plans. How do we square that one, or is that just politics?
It's history, I think, actually. I mean, we're now in a different place. The public finances are as they are. The economy is growing in a fragile sort of way, and we think it will grow a bit next year, a bit more than this year.
What's the CBI's growth projection for 2011?
2% growth in GDP.
That's slightly below the government's, isn't it?
It is. It's the same as the IMF. The IMF has come out the other day with that figure. I think the government would be happy if it could get 2%, to be honest with you.
Richard Lambert of the CBI there. And now I'm joined by two redoubtable media dames, Polly Toynbee of The Guardian, whose new book assesses Labour's record on welfare, and by The Sunday Telegraph's columnist Janet Daly. Janet, what did you make of it all?
Actually, I approve of the Chancellor's speech almost entirely, but I am very worried about the removal of child benefit to families who are notionally higher income. There is a serious anomaly in the two earner families, where there are two earners each earning $38,000 a year, will be able to keep their child benefit, but a single earner family or a single parent who earns over $44,000 a year will lose this
but
child
such
benefit.
Such anomalies always exist in the tax system. I've been surprised talking to delegates down there where, you know, young women, old women, they're not so bothered by this as I'd have expected. They say it's quite a lot of money, $44,000.
I personally know of a couple of families having grandchildren who will be worried by it, but I mean, that's neither here nor there, that's anecdotal. The point is that universal child benefit was brought in to replace the child tax allowance. If you remove the child benefit from higher earning, in inverted commas, families, you are effectively saying that there is no distinction between people who have children and people who do not have children in the society. You're failing to distinguish the responsibilities of having children in the tax and benefit system.
Well, Polly Toynbee, to use another phrase of the Chancellor's, you could say having children is a lifestyle choice, because that's what he said about the poor.
Well, it's interesting that it is families with children who've been targeted so far, whereas pensioners like you and I, Mike, are Janet, we're all keeping our bus passes, we're keeping our winter
fuel. Do we know that?
I don't know. Winter fuel allowance may go yet.
I bet we're not.
Well, Cameron has said firmly, I mean, it'd be interesting if he suddenly breaks that promise, but the first ones to take the hit have been families, and I think it's generally true that Labour tends to pile more onto families and children, and Tories worry more about pensioners, perhaps because Tories have a rather older lot of supporters.
But in recent years, surely, both of you, it's single people or married people without children who've took the burden of Labour's restructuring of the tax base. Families were, as you say, a bit looked after, weren't they?
Yes, that's true under successive governments, I think, for the last sort of 20 years. And it's true that people who have children have a lot more to spend money on and must spend money on a lot more things. I don't think it's particularly invidious for people without children to have to pay more tax. I think the idea that you should recognise the responsibilities of child rearing in the tax and benefit system in some way as absolutely essential to a civilized society.
Now, I'm determined to get some disagreement between you two. When we hear the Chancellor saying we could have gone the way of Greece, Spain and Ireland in terms of our ratings from those lousy, useless credit rating agencies which were asleep when the economy went bang, do you mind that sort of talk, Janet, or do you think it inflammatory and self-serving?
No, I don't mind that sort of talk, actually. I think it's probably politically necessary, that sort of talk. There has to be emollient talk on some level and confrontational talk on some level. You know, that doesn't worry me. And in fact, I think I'm not worried at all, and this is where you may get a disagreement between Polly and me, about the general reform of welfare. I don't like the idea of paying people to be poor, so I'm quite happy about that. But I am much more worried about removing benefits that were once brought in to replace a tax allowance.
Okay, Polly, this fear of the double dip, the fear that the Chancellor is bearing down too much on the debt, just switch to BlackBerry off there. No, we haven't. Too much on that. We might tip us all back into another recession, especially when the US economy appears to be faltering.
I don't know that the double dip, I think it's a bit dangerous to keep on about the double dip because it might not quite happen. I think bumping along the bottom. The danger is Japan and simply not getting the growth that we need. And we know that growth will deal with the deficit far quicker than any number of cuts. And if you're not careful, you cut and then you chase your tail, you reduce growth and you keep cutting and you get into the downward spiral of the Irish kind. And that's what we risk.
Now, you have written learned books about welfare and social policy, which Janet Daly here has probably thrown across the room in rage. But when the Chancellor says, you know, we are instituting the greatest reform of the welfare system since William Beveridge in the 1940s, and you think, hang on, you've only been in power since May the 11th, aren't they running before they can walk? These things are difficult. If they weren't difficult, governments of any colour would have done housing benefit. It's hard.
Most people here don't understand it. Most ministers don't understand it. Most of the MPs here I've talked to don't understand it. And certainly most punters don't. So they're striding about saying, isn't it wonderful? We've got a simple, single, universal system. Everybody goes, wonderful. And then when you look at it...
We're all going to have a universal credit for everything.
But, of course, it's not true. When you look at it in detail, in fact, everybody is still going to have to be assessed for their housing benefit, for their child tax credits, for their child care credits, you know, depending how many children you've got. It's still going to be just as complicated, but it's simply got a rebranding. With any luck, it'll have a better computer system that may take some of the glitches out of it, but you also, your heart sinks, oh my God, another great big DWP and HMRC IT system. Is that really going to help? Well, we hope it works, because anything that makes it simpler is good, but it isn't quite the revolution that they say.
If it were not the revolution, I mean, you would be complaining if any of those components were taken out of it, wouldn't you? You want housing and children and all that stuff to be taken into account. So it is going to be taken into account, rather in the way that it used to be taken into account for tax coding. And that's what it's going to be like. It's going to be like a negative income tax. It's going to be, you know, you get money back if you're poor, you give money in if you're rich. That's the idea. And so it is going to be a simpler system, and it's also going to enormously reduce the scope for fraud. The creation of welfareism was a fad of the 70s and 80s, and it was a mistake, yes, and now we have to find a way out of it.
Bolly.
No way has been found out of it. It's still the impossible conundrum. You cannot have everybody better off in work without a huge deadweight cost, so it's going to cost a fortune, or else it isn't quite what it says it is, and we haven't seen the figures yet. It's impossible. Everybody's tried it. Peter Lilly tried it. Everybody wanted to do it. It's
Queen
not...
Elizabeth I tried some of it. The Elizabethan poor law attempted to address this problem in, I think, 1601. None of us were around.
You were, Michael.
Polly Toynbee there with Janet Daly of The Telegraph. Well, a tough morning there. Lots of things for the conference to digest. How better to cheer them up than to call for Boris Johnson, the Mayor of London, always good value at the lectern, probably still, I think, the most popular Tory among the activists. Boris duly obliged. He rounded in on the RMT union for its part in the latest strike affecting the London Underground. Caught on it myself last night, hopping around North London on buses for hours. And then he went on in his own inimitable way to explain how London's economy is inextricably linked with those of the regions. And I couldn't help think, listening to Boris, as he checked off all the names of different towns and cities, here is a man who has not quite, David Cameron, please concentrate here, not quite given up on national ambition. Listen to him.
I hope, by the way, we'll be joined by the people of Derby. Well, yes, where we 400 jobs have just been created making our new air-conditioned trains. And by the people of Crewe, where rail parts are manufactured. And by the people of Coventry and Portsmouth and Worthing. Worthing, ladies and gentlemen. What do we have in Worthing? Well, what do we have in Coventry and Portsmouth? We have the back offices, I'm afraid, in Coventry and Portsmouth for the congestion charge. And what do we have in Worthing? We have the congestion charge correspondence unit, my friends. We do. With a huge number of jobs. And if that body is not popular anywhere else in the world, it is popular in Worthing. And I therefore hope that every MP... I hope that every MP and citizen of those towns and cities around Britain will join me in supporting London's transport budgets, not just because they produce jobs across the UK, though they do, but because a London where people can move cheaply and easily across the biggest and greatest city in Europe is indispensable for the success of the whole UK economy.
Mayor Boris Johnson there, who has, of course, been recently re-selected to fight the 2012 contest, the Olympic contest in London, against his old sparring partner, Ken Livingstone. But does his magic still work? I thought the response was a bit flat in the hall when I was there. So I asked a few delegates whether or not Boris still does it for them.
I think he's funny, but he's also a realist as well. He actually says it how it is, and he relates to people who work in London and live in London and know just exactly what it's like to get about.
And he was mentioning all the other towns and cities in Britain where London generates jobs, including the congestion charge complaints office, which I think he said it was in Worthing. It's popular in Worthing. Got a laugh for that. That's okay too, or was it just boosting Boris?
I don't think so. I think he actually mentioned everybody and everything that's included with to do with London. So I think the fact that he got a laugh was that people...
Where
have
are
to
you
pay.
From?
I'm from Warrington.
All right. Most popular Tory politician, Boris?
I think so, yeah. I really do like him.
You're probably right. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Boris, make you laugh?
Yeah, it's really charming and really nice. I really enjoy it. Totally.
Where are you from?
I'm from Birmingham.
Yes, and he was slightly rude about Birmingham, wasn't he? He said, London creates the financial services industry in Birmingham and a lot else.
Not really, I don't think so.
But you're going to forgive Boris, I can tell by the smile on your face. He gets away with it, doesn't he?
I thought he's always a good turn. I mean, I'm from Lincolnshire, so it's nice to see Boris do a turn. And
is he generating jobs in Lincolnshire? He claimed to be generating them all over Britain.
Well, yes, because we've got a brand new... the county council has put a new bus service in, which connects up to the main line, and we can now get to the centre of London in what I would consider a fair commuting time.
How much time is that?
Just under 2 hours.
Do you think Boris has got any future in national politics?
That's not for me to say. I'll let him
make it. Say.
I think Boris, certainly if he wanted to have a future in national politics, certainly could.
Now, I'm off. I'm off to chair the Guardian's Fringe debate for the Tory conference, which is a panel starring Michael Gove, Tory blogger Tim Montgomery, backbench MP and brain Nick Bowles, and to introduce a bit of post-coalition complexity, former Labour Cabinet Minister Charles Clarke. It's the third in a series during the conference season, and you can hear what happened on tomorrow's Conference Daily. That's all for now. The producer was Phil Maynard. I'm Mike White. Thanks for listening. See you tomorrow.